Steve, let it be known that Wendy heard your weather forecast and has 100% rejected your weather forecast.
You don't like it?
She won't have it.
90s are so 90s. Yeah. Go away.
Yeah.
This is it, though. You know, you could do it if it's a couple days.
It's like bonus summer, Wendy. You don't want bonus summer? You get extra summer.
I don't like hot weather, but I think this is kind of fun. Although it was so humid last night.
Oh, my God, I know. AC had to go back on. I can't sleep when I'm hot.
How do you ever sleep?
I turn the air on down to 60.
Steve just paid you the ultimate compliment. You refused to.
I didn't get it. I went the opposite way.
And my lawn, it's like it's June. I mean, it's growing usually this time of year.
Thriving.
It's just thriving now.
Yeah.
I'm mowing once a week.
And it's so weird because these poor trees are starting to change, but it's not like weather-wise today. They're going, what? Mm-hmm. We're too early.
Mm-hmm. Trees are shaped like question marks today everywhere you look. So you wouldn't take this if somebody said, you can have this until like December 5th or 6th. You wouldn't jump at this?
90? No.
Yeah? Uh-uh.
No, I wouldn't do that either. No way.
No, I'm pretty happy with 70 year-round.
Yeah. That's not on the table, though. You can either have this or your regular cold weather that you get. You'll start getting it in October or November.
No. The choice is this or our regular weather, right?
Yeah.
Then if we took this, we'd sacrifice the period of 65, 70 degree highs.
Mm, okay.
There was a day, it was 25, maybe a little longer. My girlfriend Sue and her husband Jeff were getting married. I was standing up in the wedding.
Oh, yeah, I was there.
And it was 86 degrees on October 7th, I believe.
It happens.
I mean, the air conditioning was not on in the church.
Right. Right.
It was really hot.
Sure.
And that's October. And that was just occasionally that happened 20 some years ago.
Yeah.
Now we could totally still have 80 degree weather.
I would imagine.
All through October.
Sure.
Maybe November.
Keep going.
I just don't want 90s.
No? Too hot for you?
Yep.
Get a push up. Have a push up, Wendy. Enjoy a push up.
Who were we talking to about push ups yesterday?
I'm trying to sell him as the official
Sarah
snack food.
Yes. Sarah Thiemann, you're right.
Right? WGN's very own.
We were talking about him, and she pointed out that a push up, the actual tube that it's in is like a toilet paper roll, mm-hmm. and the little thing you push up is like a plunger.
Yeah.
Who knew after all these push ups?
It ruined push ups for me.
I know.
There used to be a time where I would say, if somebody said to me, let's go get a push-up, I'd be all over that. But now after that, hearing that dissertation, thanks, but no thanks.
Never thought of the toilet paper roll.
I'll have a screwball and forget about it.
What's a screwball?
The Good Humor Guy would have this thing. It was triangular shaped. It was sherbet, or do you say sherbet?
Most people do.
Yeah. And then it had a gumball at the apex.
It did?
Yes.
My Good Humor Man
Quite
never
delicious.
Had that.
Oh. No, I think that's standard on a Good Humor
really?
Truck. Yeah, the screwball.
I've never heard of that.
Miracle is what it is. So good.
Now I want a screwball. Oh, I got one. You're working
If you
with
didn't
me.
Just condemn the hot weather, the Good Humor Guy would come by and I'd get you one. But you just said no to summer.
The screwballs have gone for the season.
They're gone for the year.
Didn't you always want a change belt, or is that just me?
It would be pretty cool to have a change belt. What if you just went into a store and bought stuff, and then your bill came to like $62.88, and you just go, and then you just kept pressing your belt?
Oh, that'd
that would
be
impress
so
them.
Cool.
I'm sure there are clerks who have had people come and pay them with the change belt.
I'm going to look on eBay for a change belt.
Do you know what apparatus I always wanted, and then my parents got me one at some point? That thing that umpires have that you move with your thumb that keeps track of ball strikes and outs?
I used to umpire. I had one of those.
Did you have one of those?
Yeah.
I didn't umpire, and I had one. I just walked around with it.
Ball two on you.
Yep.
Just made stuff
up? I have no idea what I did. Like, if I was watching a game, I would keep playing with it during the game. That sounded nice. You know what I mean?
Yes.
I would keep score, although there was no score on there. It was just ball strikes and outs.
Excuse
all
me,
during
ma'am,
the game.
That was low and inside. Ball two on
right.
you.
Right. I was a big fan of Tom Hallion.
I don't know
the
who
umpire.
That is.
Okay. Huge fan. Huge, huge fan.
Not Doug Harvey?
Nah.
I love Doug's hair.
He had his times, but I don't know, Steve. I'll be honest with you. All right. There's so much stuff on today's show. Most importantly, Tom Mikaitis will be with us. We've had Tom on with us many times in the past. He's a terrorism expert. We'll talk about a lot of stuff, 9/11. I know whenever September 11th comes up, people always say, let's talk about other stuff. And I understand that. I totally get that. However, it's just so important to remember that date. You know, there's never a time where I see September. I'm looking at it right now on our show schedule. Anytime I see that date written out anywhere or I hear that date, you get a little tinge, don't you? You just get your heart beats a little differently when you see those numbers together in that order. And I know it's been 18 years, and I can't get through the day without thinking about it, you know?
I found I was looking at lots of stuff online last night about 9/11, and there's some new information that I did not know, that some of the flight attendants that were putting up a fight and had realized that they've been hijacked, it listed all the flight crews on all the planes, and some of them were stabbed by the hijackers. I'm sorry, but I didn't know that information. They had released new information. I heard Steve saying about the 9/11 Museum, which I've never been to, where they actually have recordings of people saying their goodbyes. That was on something I watched last night. And I have to tell you, this morning, I felt like I got socked in the gut again. It's still...
I know.
You know, the thing that's striking for me is everyone talks about themselves on this day. And there's a reason for that. I think it's because it was, for those of us who are around, you know, it was so personal. That you talked about, you know, you mentioned the sock in the gut. We end up telling stories about ourselves rather than kind of what happened that day, where we were or who we called or things like that. It's very personal, a very personal event.
Do you think, Steve, that to some extent that's because most of us kind of know the rules of what to expect on any given day, but on that day, the rules just were non-existent. Well, anything could happen.
You're talking about knowing what to expect. My clear memory was I was riding the Wendella water taxi just off the Wrigley Building at would have been the moment of the first one, and I looked up. I was riding with our intern at the time, and I'm like, look at this beautiful day. What a beautiful day.
It was gorgeous.
But
again, it's my, that's my, we all remember our stories from that day.
And we'll talk about that throughout the day as well, because we all have our own individual stories. My son Dylan is 16, and he said that he is the first class that they were taught about 9/11 in history, because none of those kids were born when it happened. And that just, like, wow, that's weird.
It's hard to grasp
There's
so much about that day that is hard to comprehend. It's hard to grasp, that, you know. So, yeah, we won't inundate you with you, inundate the subject with you throughout the day, but it's certainly going to come up. I don't know how it can't. Stick around. There's a lot ahead. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Are you going to that, Wendy, do you think?
Yes.
You're going to go there? All right. I'll be there.
God, remember Juice Newton?
Yes. Yes.
All right, there is all the rage, these Queen of Hearts jackpots. I don't really know how they work, but I know that there has been a rollover, $700,000, the largest jackpot yet for a Chicago Catholic church. And on the line with us right now is Father James Wallace from St. Juliana Parish on the Northwest Side. Hello, Father James.
What's going on, guys? How you doing?
$700,000.
That's a lot of money, sir.
A little over, probably, by tomorrow night's drawing.
Okay, so every Thursday for the past year, people have been going where to participate in this Queen of Hearts?
Yeah, so this is St. Juliana Parish. It's a Catholic parish on the northwest side. It's actually not the largest Catholic Queen of Hearts. That was St. Cadge down the south side, so just going to correct you there.
Okay, feel free.
It's not a confession, but...
Forgive me, Father, for I have sinned, and I am not a very good Catholic either, so...
But if you buy a ticket tomorrow night, you'll...
You're absolved.
Yeah.
That's my penance?
Yeah, sure. Why not? Buy a few tickets.
All right,
so anyways, it's all the proceeds, or half the proceeds, I should say, of the pot go to benefit St. Juliana. We do the drawing every Thursday night at 9 o'clock at Firewater Saloon. That's a... an awesome place in Edison Park. Edison Park's a great little neighborhood, northwest side of Chicago. Bunch of restaurants and bars, and Firewater is one of them. So that's where we do the drawing. It's live on Facebook every week. We've been doing it for the last year plus.
And no winners yet, because if I get this right, and please correct me again, feel free if I'm wrong, you buy a raffle ticket, and then if your number is pulled, then you get to go to the wall and point to a card, and they turn it around, and if that is, in fact, the Queen of Hearts, you've won the jackpot or half of it.
So not quite. That's going to be another. That's going to be another three Hail Marys for the past year. Yeah. So it's kind of a double thing that's got to happen. You buy a ticket each week, right? So you say, you know, all right, Wendy, and then you're going to pick a number 1 through 54.
Oh, okay.
So your ticket has got to be pulled. So we got. I pull one ticket, and I'm like, oh, hey, it's Wendy. She's chosen number 51. We go and unveil number 51. If it's the Queen of Hearts, you win the pot. If it's not the Queen of Hearts, okay, all those tickets get destroyed. 51 stays pulled, flipped over. So now next week, you got to pick another number, obviously not 51. So now you have a 1 in 53 chance to win. So the odds get better each week.
Each week.
So it can potentially go 54 weeks. So
Father James, I know this is a dumb question, but it needs to be asked. Why 54 if there's 52 cards in a deck? What are those two extra ones?
Joker.
Put the two jokers.
Oh, the jokers are in there.
Joker's wild.
I guess so. All right. That makes sense. That makes perfect sense. So the odds increase each week as one card is eliminated each week. So right now, how many cards are still left in that the 52/54 card deck?
There's four?
I know. I kind of want to go.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, right. So pick a. Well, I know. Wendy's already got her penance to do, so I don't know. So that's it's exciting. It's just generated a lot of buzz around the community. People are energized by it. It's fun, but to know that half the pot goes to benefit the parish.
Right.
The school, the parish. I mean, we do a lot for the community, so. That, I think, excites people, and then, obviously, they have a chance to win some life-changing money, too.
Does the winner need to be present at the drawing or not?
Do not need to be present. You write your name and phone number on the ticket stub. We'll give you a call if you win.
Okay.
And one other thing, just a little gift, like if your name gets pulled, and, you know, back to the example, like, so Wendy's ticket's pulled, she chose 51.
Yeah.
51 is not the Queen of Hearts, but Wendy still gets a $100 gift card from the parish. So you don't go home completely empty-handed.
But you could split the pot and get nearly $350,000. Is this ruining church bingo? Because I don't think that pays out as well.
Yeah, right. No comment on the church bingo rivalry.
That's fair.
All right. Can I just talk to you about something else that I saw all over Facebook, something else that will benefit St. Juliana? It's an annual gala, and a friend of ours, Kevin Matthews, is going to be honored. Tell us about this as well.
Yeah, this is an exciting event for us. So this is this upcoming Saturday at the Rosemont Convention Center, the St. Juliana Emerald City Gala. Again, the proceeds benefit our parish and school. It's called the John McDonough Humanitarian Award. So John McDonough is the president and CEO of the Blackhawks. He is an alumnus of St. Juliana. So he grew up in Edison Park. He went to St. Juliana. He graduated from there. We're very, very proud of him. So we named the award after him, and we gave him the inaugural award last year. So it's obviously a humanitarian award for those who give a lot back to the community. So this second year, we're honoring Kevin Matthews, the Chicago radio legend. John McDonough will present the award to Kevin. Kevin has obviously done so much, not just his career, but benefiting. I know he's raised hundreds of thousands of dollars for Maryville Academy Orphanage for Boys and Girls. He's got a deep faith, a deep love for God, for his neighbor. So there's no better recipient than him. So we're excited to have Kevin.
And can we bet on that also? Is it possible to bet on that or not?
He's already getting the award.
Oh, he is definitely. All right. I'm still going
I'm
still putting 20 bucks
there's
down.
There's some raffle things that we can do. Right. Yeah, there's great auction items, I guess, if you want. you can bet tomorrow night. Quick, get your tickets. Thursday night's the drawing. You have till 8:45 to buy tickets for the Queen of Hearts.
All right. Give the address of the Firewater Saloon, because that's what's happening tomorrow night. What time do we be there?
Well, so you don't have to be present to win, but we'd love to have you. 9 o'clock is when I will be up on stage pulling the ticket. So you can buy your tickets there at Firewater. You can buy them at Moretti's in Edison Park. You can buy them at the Emerald Isle in Edison Park. And, of course, you can buy them here at St. Juliana. So you can come to church as well. Go to Mass, say some prayers, buy your ticket. You know, if you don't win the raffle, you'll at least win eternal salvation for your soul.
So that's not too bad.
Will St. Juliana's have a full-fledged sports book anytime soon, Father, do you know?
Or is it... we're looking into that one.
All right. That'll be great.
Bill is only half Catholic. The other half is Jewish.
I'll stay for the first part of the ceremony. I'll leave at halftime.
Wow. Interesting combo. All right.
All right. Well, so nice to meet you. Good luck with everything. I hope to see you tomorrow night. Father James Wallace from St. Juliana Parish. And if you want to find out more about the Kevin Matthews Award, the humanitarian award, the John McDonough one, you can go. Just go to stjuliana.org. Is that the best place to tell people to go?
Absolutely.
Okay, bless me, Father. I mean, bless you.
For you have sinned a lot.
Yeah, bless your heart. Okay. Yep.
All right, thanks,
Thank you,
Father
so much.
James.
Thank you. God
Appreciate
bless.
It.
Yeah, I took the God bless away from him. I shouldn't have done that.
I noticed that.
Quick break, and then we're back with news. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder at 720 WGN.
Stop turning on that September day. Were you in the yard with your wife and children, or working on some stage in L.A.? Did you stand there in shock at the sight of that black smoke rising against that blue sky? Did you shout out in anger and fear for your neighbor, or did you just sit down and cry?
I still cry. I was looking at footage this morning and last night, and it still affects me as greatly as the day it happened. We have terrorism expert, professor of history at DePaul University, and author on the line with us right now, Tom Mikaitis. Tom, everyone says never forget. I don't think we're capable of forgetting this day.
No, I don't think we are. You know, historians have kind of gotten away from events changing history, but it's difficult to think, you know, not see it this way. If nothing else, our sense of invincibility and confidence was kind of shocked to the core. And I think every one of us can remember exactly where we were when we first heard the news. That's called time fixing. And I think it's, you know, it's going to take a long time before the memory fades, probably till this whole generation is gone. But there are a bunch of kids who actually are turning 18 today who were born on the day it happened, and they have no memory of it at all.
Tom, you'd hear the phrase sucker punched. America got sucker punched on September 11th. In all honesty, did anyone see this coming? Was there anyone that predicted or could have predicted what took place?
I think they were. Unfortunately, they were fairly far down the ladder. On the, you know, there were analysts at Langley who were sending out warnings that some kind of attack was imminent. The FBI had a field agent in Phoenix who spotted these Middle Eastern men trying to fly planes level but not land or take off. But I just think it was a failure of imagination. Like, we didn't really think we would ever be hit in the homeland. So it was a collective kind of thing. I don't know that you could say that anybody made a, you know, an egregious individual error on this particular one.
You know, more details obviously are coming out, and every year it seems I learn something new. We all knew about, was it Todd Beamer who said, let's roll?
Yeah.
And then looking at the information today, somebody posted something on Facebook about all the flight attendants who really did their job, and two of them or several of them had been actually stabbed prior to the crash. That's new information I knew nothing about, and what heroes really trying to save things.
Yeah, it's a reminder that although there's evil in the world, there is also an incredible mass of decent, ordinary people who will step up when a crisis occurs. And I find that very, very hopeful. And I think something that families, I hope, can take some solace from.
Tom, if you'll remember back to 18 years ago, the common belief was, okay, that could very well have been wave one, that there'll be more attacks. We were all so afraid that there were going to be follow-ups.
Yeah.
Somehow there were not. Was the original plan for there to be follow-ups to the original attacks of September 11th or not?
No, I mean, I can remember vividly walking out of WGN studio after around 10 o'clock at night, and, you know, just kind of, wait a minute, what's wrong? And it was the dead silence of nothing in the air. that, you know, take all of that for granted. I think had we not been as effective in responding to the Al-Qaeda threat, they certainly would have liked to. But no, we now realize it was one-off. But there's really, you can't fault the response, because the reasonable conclusion was that there could be multiple teams of people in the U.S. or abroad just preparing to do exactly the same thing. And with so many planes in the air, at any given moment, I think we did what we had to do, is what you're going to do, bring everything to the ground at the nearest available spot and start from there.
That was one of the eeriest things about the whole day was, you know, yeah, you get so used to hearing airplanes flying over your head, and it was just so silent everywhere. Yeah. And just, again, you felt like you were punched in the gut. There was no explanation to all the feelings that were going through everyone's mind on that day.
Yeah, I got home that night. Again, I got out, no silence, and all of a sudden an F-16 is barreling overhead. You know, they were flying air cover over Chicago out of the National Guard base up in Minnesota, and it was I mean, it was a punch in the gut, there's no question, and it knocked the wind out of all of us. And it took a long time, I think, to get our confidence back, which we did, and I think we can take great pride in that.
Tom, my family and I were in vacation in Delray Beach, Florida, which is right on the coast, and even after they had grounded all airlines, there was commercial airlines, you had military planes constantly patrolling,
yeah,
back and forth, flying very, very low. But that was, yeah, a strange feeling to see them flying that low. I never saw anything like that before.
And the scary thing, too, is were those pilots prepared to shoot down an American airliner heading for a building?
Yeah.
I mean, you may remember the whole loop was essentially shut down and people were leaving, you know, these high rise, you know, it's hard for anybody who didn't live it to recall the level of, you know, of anxiety that was pervasive at the time.
Tom's latest book is called Violent Extremists, Understanding the Domestic and International Terrorist Threat. You do have the moniker of terrorism expert. I know we've had terrorist attacks in the past, but now all of a sudden terrorism means a different thing. It was on our soil. Yeah.
Exactly right, and I make this point pretty heavily in the book. There's still an ISIS, Al-Qaeda threat. I think those groups may be reviving, and we'll see a 2.0 version at some point. As long as we remain vigilant, I don't expect a catastrophic attack. You could have more Orlandos, more San Bernardinos. But what worries me now is the pervasive wave of violence from the right. We had Dayton, we had El Paso, and then what most people don't realize, in the next 2 weeks, law enforcement foiled about 7 other plots, 4 of them apparently involving people who espoused a far-right ideology.
Let's take a break. You're okay on time, correct, Tom? We've got a little bit of time with you.
Sure, sure.
Tom Mikaitis is here, terrorism expert, professor of history at DePaul, and author of the new book, Violent Extremists, Understanding the Domestic and International Terrorist Threat. We'll come back with more in a moment. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. It's Bill Effen, it's Wendy Snyder. Our guest is Tom Mikaitis. Tom is a terrorism expert, professor of history at DePaul, and the author of the new book, Violent Extremists, Understanding the Domestic and International Terrorist Threat. Tom, as you're well aware, there was a scheduled meeting, a meeting that didn't take place, but it was supposed to take place between our president and members of the Taliban. What are your thoughts on that meeting, sir?
Well, meetings should take place, but to have one at Camp David the week of the anniversary of 9/11 was a singularly bad idea. Unfortunately, he thought better of it, or his advisors did, and I'm not sure which. But, and you know, usually what you do are proximity talks, and you only have a major meeting like that when you're ready to kind of get close to an agreement.
I have a question that you may not be able to answer. If, you know, hindsight is far greater, if we were checking, making you take your shoes off at the airports and checking things, and if we knew what we know now, could this have been prevented?
Yeah, probably could have. The egregious mistakes occurred at the small airport. For example, apparently one of the hijackers that went through, I think it was Portland, but I'm not sure on that, you know, was there on a student visa, but couldn't he couldn't really adequately describe where he was going or what he was studying. So I think the screeners today would have caught some of the things that we, you know, that were clearly missed on 9/11. But, you know, again, we have to remember, I mean, you used to be able to walk your loved one all the way to the gate and say, you know, say goodbye to them as they were stepping out of the plane.
Right.
You know, and meet them at the other way. And we were prepared for foreign attacks. I mean, we'd had an attack in East Africa, the embassies of 98. We'd had the USS Cole bombing attack. But, you know, we just weren't thinking that it could ever happen here. And that's most human tragedies. That's usually what people will say, whether they're personal, family, or nationals. We just never thought about this possibility.
Are you surprised at the fight that first responders and their families have had to do to get what they have coming to them, their health insurance? You know, John Stewart was instrumental in
yeah.
having. Isn't that crazy that even though we look at those people as heroes, we were still trying to hold back their health coverage?
Well, it's shameful. It's not just crazy. It's shameful. I mean, anybody who does work with grief knows that it doesn't go away. I mean, every anniversary is a reminder. And I think any of us, even just having to argue with insurance companies over normal sorts of issues, can sympathize. But to get, you know, to have your own government, your own country not take care of you when you have, you know, made such a sacrifice is pretty bad.
For all the sorrow we all feel when we watch specials, those French guys that put a documentary together, which is amazing, you see things, your heart just aches. I also have the other side of me, which gets so angry when I see these conspiracy theorists. What do you say mm-hmm. to those people today?
Oh, you know what? I think you realistically have to say that they're individuals that, you know, at some level are disturbed. You know, I got an email back from somebody after being on GN today talking about plots and false narratives and all this kind of stuff. And, you know, the less credence you give them, you just don't respond to them. You just basically recognize them for what they are. It's disturbing that people can believe those things. And some of them are not, you know, some of them are quite normal. It just happens to fit their view of the world and so on. And there's not much you can do to convince them otherwise.
Tom, we, or what we hope are the good guys, learned a lot from what took place on September 11th. But couldn't you also say that extremist groups, the bad guys, also learned a lot from what took place on September 11th?
Absolutely. They got very flexible very, very quickly. They realized it's not easy to attack, to get a hold of an airliner anymore. It's also not easy to attack a high-profile target like a government building. So what have they been doing? They've been using vehicles. They've been using small arms, bombs, suicide vests, things like that that are easy to do. I mean, you know, they used to say the car bomb was the poor man's cruise missile. Well, now, you know, the car is an improvised tank, as we saw in Nice, France, with a truck driver, or, you know, light arms and small explosive devices. I mean, that's what worked in Paris, Brussels, San Bernardino. It worked in Orlando. I mean, it's just really easy to do. That's going to be the ongoing threat.
There have been a lot of quotes from some of the family members of the victims of 9/11, and one that really mm-hmm. has stood out to me is from Sandy Dahl, wife of Flight 93 pilot Jason Dahl in Shanksville, Pennsylvania. And her quote is, "If we learn nothing else from this tragedy, we learn that life is short and there is no time for hate." That one just hit home to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, me too. I mean, the other thing I remember about 9/11 that was so powerful is for several weeks how much people pulled together.
It really was a coming together.
And there was a civility in ordinary life. What I call the bump and shove of everyday life was a lot less. And there was a concern for the welfare of the neighbor and the others. And that, we have lost that. And I think that really, that quote you just read is a reminder of how important that is. And if we all remembered that, I think we could get along maybe a little bit better.
I agree.
Tom, I've heard people reference that the terrorism world is looking for the new Osama bin Laden. Is it that clear cut? Is it that plain and simple? Are they scouting for a guy who can bring that to them? Is that true?
No, I don't really think it is. You're going to have leaders come and go. I mean, we just apparently, if the stories are true, we took out Osama bin Laden's son, Hamza, who was the designated heir, but the organization continues to function. El-Baghdadi, you know, eventually they may get him, they may not. But the real target, the real center of gravity is the ideology. As long as the ideas are out there, there will always be a new leader, a new group, and a new set of followers.
I have to admit, and people are going to get mad at me for saying this, I am happy that no other event such as 9/11 has taken place, but I have to tell you, I'm a little surprised. I was very worried about it for a while.
Well, you and everyone else, how could you not be? I mean, you remember throughout, 2002, we were going up and down, orange alert, yellow alert, the summer's coming, this holiday's coming, 4th of July is coming. You know, we all now, we live in a different world. That's really how 9/11 changed us, is that our awareness that we can't take our security for granted anymore is there. But on the other hand, you know, we picked up, dusted ourselves off, and went on. I never forget, at that time, I mean, she's gone now, but my mother was in her 90s, and, you know, we talked about it, and she goes, you know what, we had Pearl Harbor. Deal with it, you know, and it was a sobering thing to realize that was a punch in the gut too. Americans, you know, were very angry and very shocked, and then they approached the problem with a new resolve. And I think that's what we can focus on and take great pride in.
We appreciate your time today on this day, the 18th commemoration, let's say, of 9/11. Mm-hmm. Terrorism expert, professor of history at DePaul University and author, his new book, Violent Extremists, Understanding the Domestic and International Terrorist Threat. It's out now. Thank you so much. He's Tom Mikaitis. Thank you.
Thanks. Thank you, Tom. Thank you.
Sing it, Wendy.
It's an instrumental.
Oh, all right. Don't sing it. It'd be wrong to sing it. Look who's here. It's Dane Neal, the host of On the Road with Dane Neal, heard Saturdays from 2 to 4 p.m. right here on this very station.
Yes.
Hello, Dane.
Yes. Hello.
Nice to see you.
Hello. These are exciting times.
These sure are exciting times.
Yes. Well, we talk oftentimes when it comes to food and it comes to events in Chicago, so many things happening. Well, now we've got the world of food when it comes to really what I consider to be the best culinary food tour in the country.
We want to say the Super Bowl, but we can't because that's a copyrighted phrase.
I coined the phrase Super Bowl of Swine back in year two.
Did you?
Because other people have assimilated that.
But they say Super Bowl in that, so isn't there a problem with that?
Well, I think you say Super Bowl of Swine.
Oh, then it's okay.
You know what? Right, until the NFL starts doing similar things.
Hold on, there's someone at the door. Hold on.
We were thinking of doing it. Yeah. And so what happens with Cajon 555, it is a culinary tour that raises awareness for heritage breed pork. It starts that conversation. It engages five chefs, five wines, five pigs. You get them together, and it's an amazing combination, right? Because the higher purpose isn't, I mean, it's a cause, but it's also a cause to, like I said, raise awareness for that, what the farmers do, and all of that stuff happens all around the country in cities here and there, Miami and San Francisco and Minneapolis. There's even in Canada and, of course, Chicago, and then converges here where all of those champions are here for Grand Cajon, which is coming up on September 15th at Fulton Market. In studio with us is we have our reigning Chicago Cajon 555 champ, Chef Danny Espinoza from Cantina Laredo.
Hi, Danny.
How are you?
Congrats.
Thanks for having me here.
Danny just taught me, and I took 4 years of French, that Cajon means pig in French.
I swear words in French.
No. But so this all involves pork. Porkapalooza, that's what you should call it.
Oh, they should probably take it. It's a think tank.
Central Pork, is that taken? We'll figure something out.
And we have so many great events here, and people have gone to a lot of them. But the difference with this one is that you have farmers, heritage breed farmers, that give the pigs to the chefs, the competing chefs, the week before. They have the entire week, and you never know. Danny, is it up in the air which breed you're going to get, or can you choose one, or is it just whatever the farmer gives?
For Grand Cajon, they gave us the option of choosing, you know, the heritage breed. I stuck to my gut and I stayed with the same farmer, the same breed, Osaba. That's the heritage breed, and it has African descendants, and it's awesome, man. Just because all summer, you know, Patrick, our farmer, he was just informing me, you know, step by step, like, hey, so my pig's name is Red.
Yeah.
And he would, you know, just live in the forest and eat mango, papaya, organic lettuce, nuts, mushrooms. And it's crazy because it gets very, you know, super critical, because a lot of these flavors penetrate the meat, the flavor,
sure,
just everything, you know, the fat content.
Yeah. Awesome. So you've experimented in the past with other breeds of pig, and you have found this one to be most conducive to what you're trying to prepare, right?
Well, yeah, yes, but honestly, with the regionals back in, what was it, March?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, it was in March. They just did a lottery picked, and, you know, I got stuck with Patrick and the Asaba pig, and I did my own research. You know, I read about Sean Brock, you know, great chef in the world, and that's one of his favorite heritage breed pigs. And
they taste different breeds, they taste differently.
They really do.
It's so, and it's part of the conversation, because if you can get people, consumers, food enthusiasts, knowing what it is, excited about it and asking for it. You used to think that, you know, pork was pork, just like a banana is a banana, and there's no difference in that, but there's a bunch of the different breeds, and it's totally different as far as the quality and the flavor profile than commodity pork. I mean, right, explain a little bit about the difference.
Yeah, absolutely. So for example, the pig I received this weekend, the fat content, and when we talk about fat, everybody freaks out, but we're talking about good fat, you know, good, natural,
tasty fat.
Yeah, tasty fat.
That was my nickname just a few years ago.
My hip-hop name. It was tasty fat.
But it's nice to see, you know, these animals.
Sorry.
No, you're good. It's nice to see these you know, these pigs get treated with enough respect that they get to grow. You know, you're not force feeding them, and it's like, okay, your time's up in 20 days, 30 days.
Yeah, but they're still going to die at the end of it.
Yeah, but
spoiler, you know, alert, Wendy. Yeah.
Sorry. Come on.
It's one of those things where I think as a farmer, as a chef, as a consumer,
yeah,
you basically show your level of respect for the animal, because he or she gave its life away. And you should respect it to just your most outmost ability.
I like to hear that.
Oh, yeah, that's positive. Would it be more advantageous to you to have the pig longer to set it up the way you want to set it up, or is this enough time?
This was, so the first pig
you just
I had,
got it last week, right, you said?
Yeah, I just got it last week. In my opinion, it's plenty of time.
It is, yeah.
You know, I'm making bacon for my dessert, so, you know, it's been curing the last 3 days. I'm gonna
bacon
let
for dessert? Well, I'm going to hug you.
That's
well,
right.
It's actually. I mean, should I tell him, Neil?
You can tell him.
I really don't care. We gave our menus, you know, a month ago or 2 months ago.
Yeah.
We're making a bacon flan with piloncillo.
I got goosebumps.
So piloncillo, Mexican refined sugar, and then we're making pork rinds that we're just going to toss in a white chocolate, a little bit of cinnamon, almost like puppy chow, and then just crumble that on top. I have these beautiful blueberries that came into season about a month and a half ago.
Yeah.
I pickled them a month and a half ago.
Oh.
A month and a half later, I'm going to make a blueberry chipotle, like vanilla puree.
Oh, that sounds so, every bit of that sounds good.
Yeah, so it's you know, I play with textures, acidity, a little bit of everything.
You are so creative.
Thank you. I try.
Wow, that sounds so good.
But it's the kind of thing that the chefs are really doing, which is different. So they get the pig for a week, and all of the dishes, and that's one of the main things that the judges and what you've judged one of the Heritage Breed,
very fun.
Heritage Fire events, and I'll be judging Grand Cachon again, and that's one of the things. One of the criteria is the creativity and the usage and all that stuff, and it's amazing. You know, you look at kind of some of the things that they're doing.
Let's take a quick break and then more with Dane Neal and Danny Espinosa. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Dane Neal is with us, host of On the Road with Dane Neal on Saturdays. I love listening to you. And Danny Espinosa is here as well. And we're talking about the Cachon. What is the big event?
It's Grand Cachon.
Grand Cachon.
Yep. And it's coming up September 15th at Fulton Market. There'll be chefs from around the country here. It's communal. They're all coming. It's a home game for Chef Danny. Of course, Chicago's champ from Cachon 555. And but you could talk a little bit. You're a better person than me, because I don't know that I would help my competitors. but you've kind of opened up not only the things that you can do, but a lot of support for them just in this journey.
Absolutely. I mean, the way I put it, it's like, you know, everyone's always kind of opened a door for me. Doesn't matter what I've been doing. So, you know, in order to extend that extra hand and, you know, One, I have Chef Georgie from Miami. He's going to be prepping in our upstairs kitchen. And, you know, it's, yes, it's a competition, but at the same time, I mean, I'm helping not to, like, see what he's going to do. I mean, what we're going to do is it's
I mean, already, sure, you're filming it, but.
Yeah, I'm going to record it. No. But, yeah, you know, as much as I can do. And, you know, if I told all the chefs, you know, you need anything, just let me know. I know how nerve-wracking it can be to travel and, oh, crap, I forgot, you know, X, Y, and Z. And
you said this to your competition. If you need anything, I will help you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Wow. He's way nicer than you are.
Way nicer. That's amazing. Had you previously known everyone you're competing against for this?
I do know Gabe Arales from Austin. He does Comedor. He's a great chef.
Yeah.
He's out there.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you know, I want to welcome him to our city as usual, and just, I don't know, that camaraderie effect. I mean, I still plan to.
You're still going to win. Yeah. Good. All right. I was hoping you'd say that. All right. Good.
Yeah. But it's good. It should be a fun one.
You think about the event, Cushion555.com, where you can get tickets, and we'll have two tickets for a listener that they can win beforehand. We'll figure out some way to give it away before the end of the segment. But also, the restaurant that you represent, I think a lot of things have to be going right on the chef and the food side in order to get to that point where you're competing like that. Cantina Laredo is knocking it out of the park these days.
Absolutely. So I started at Cantina Laredo. It's gonna be a year pretty soon, in a couple weeks. And they, you know, I was invited over to basically make it more authentic. And by authentic, it's, you know, I'm not really, I cook like a grandma, but I think in a present time, you know, it's like I always want to give this nostalgic feeling. Doesn't matter if you grew up eating moles or not. I want you to bring you back to that place of nostalgia where it's like, holy crap, I had this 5 years ago, or I had this in Mexico from this little old lady, you know, and this is my connection to it.
The memory makes it taste better too, doesn't it?
Yes, absolutely. And that's literally how I grew up all my life, with my parents, and how I really got involved with food. At Cantina Laredo, we've been doing a lot of things that normally, you know, you think of Cantina Laredo and you don't really think of, you know, traditional carnitas. You think of maybe queso and hard shell tacos, but I think there's a place and, you know, market for that. And right now people are educating themselves a lot more with the Mexican culture. You know,
as much as
we have, you know, great chefs like Rick Bayless, Carlos Gaitan, who I actually worked for many years ago, and you know, Diana Davila from Itocaya, there's still a lot more to educate. You know, I mean, we have 7 regions in that country, and that just says a lot.
Yeah.
Where we go above and beyond tacos.
Danny, are you one of the chefs that makes the rounds in the restaurant? Do you go table to table on some nights and see what people are thinking about the food or not?
Yeah, absolutely. I try to do that. It's a huge restaurant, not going to lie. Mm-hmm. But we have a great staff team, great management team, and they inform me with everything. You know, every time I make a special or I make a dish, I don't just think, oh, yeah, this is great, I'm happy. It's like, no, I go to my dishwasher, I go to my busboy, I go to the GM, I go to everyone. Mm-hmm. Everyone that eats, everyone that has an opinion, they're going to taste it. And I mean, it's that instant reaction of, holy crap, that's delicious, that's good, or it's okay. It's like, cool.
Yeah, right.
It's nice to have those.
I cook things, and I don't cook that much anymore, and certainly not professional. You want to see the look on someone's face when they taste it, and you sit there and go, well, mm-hmm. isn't mm-hmm. it great?
Yeah, yeah.
It's a good feeling.
The best is, honestly, when I surprise my own self. You know, it's like I try to kick my own self. It's like, wow, that's good, but, you know, wait, keep eating that humble pie. Let me go check with someone else and make sure it's that good.
Do you have a recipe for humble pie, by the way?
Yeah, I do. it goes back to my parents and, you know, discipline.
Yeah.
I think.
Are people more tolerant of spicier food now? There was a time where in a restaurant people were like, I need it spicy, but not too spicy. But those mm-hmm. days are gone. Everyone wants hot and spicy now.
Yeah. So, like, for example, we have a super extremely hot habanero and ghost pepper salsa that we make. And we don't just make it because, like, you know, we enjoy it. We make it because of the demand for it.
Sure.
You know, we have customers from all over, you know, walks of life. And it's funny because even from the locals to the tourists to people vacationing, they want that.
Yeah.
They want that heat.
Yeah.
Personally, I'm all about balance. If my mouth's on fire and I need a glass of milk, I think it's too much.
But want flavor, not just hot.
Yeah, you don't want to kill your palate. Like, right. I grew up in a household where my uncle would judge me. I'm like, oh, you're not Mexican, you don't eat jalapenos. I was like, I don't want my mouth on fire or freeze my toilet paper at night.
All right.
So, on that note, now here's the thing: the authentic sensibilities and the things that you bring here. You've got a lot of the things that people would know, expect, and kind of see in that team photo of flavors. But what did you bring here? Because I love your takes and spin on some of the kind of classics.
So you know, we have guacamole, and everyone you know can relate to guacamole. So at Cantina Laredo, we have a traditional guacamole with your pico de gallo. And then we do seasonal, like, chef's guacamole. So this month for September, we're doing a spicy cucumber guacamole with a roasted red pepper salsa, queso cotija, which is similar to Parmesan, nice and salty, and sunflower seeds, just toasted sunflower seeds. And that's, you know, we change it every month. So every month, I challenge myself, the cooks, the servers, and it's like, why are we doing the same thing over and over?
Yes.
We're not robots.
Good.
What else do we have? We have a flan. So it's a citrus flan. It's delicious. There's a caramelized white chocolate crumble on top and a couple strawberries. My family's from Michoacan. So Michoacan's like the mecca of carnitas. So that's where carnitas basically started. But we also got to give our thanks to the, you know, Spanish. They brought the pig over. But we make traditional style carnitas cooked in its own lard, and it's delicious. It's really, really good.
I've had the food before. Tell me what these are, because I've had those before. Jerry Nunn, a friend to the show, brought those up a few weeks ago.
Oh, so those are I mean, I call them pig wings. They're literally like pork shanks.
Oh, so good.
Yeah, and then we French them. We cook them low and slow, so it falls off the bone. You literally could just pull the bone off. We did a little bit of salsa verde and a cucumber escabeche, which is just fancy for pickled cucumbers.
So good. Great to see you. Good luck. I sure hope you win. My money's on you to take the Grand Cajon. That'd be so exciting. Dane, great to see you. Thanks for being here. Dane Neal, On the Road with Dane Neal, heard Saturdays 2 to 4 right here on WGN Radio.
So how do we want to give away? We've got the two tickets to Grand Cajon for the listener. We can do it any old way.
312-981-7200. Pick a number.
Caller 10. Be caller 10.
Okay.
Also.
Yes, Danny.
Also, I want to throw in a $50 gift card for Cantina Laredo.
Whoa.
Oh, you're generous to a fault.
Experience Danny on site at Grand Cajon, then go to the restaurant and do it there.
Absolutely. Yep. Say hello.
All right.
For Danny.
Thank you, Danny.
And where is Cantina Laredo?
Cantina Laredo is located in River North, 508 North State Street, right on the corner of State and Illinois.
Caller number 10, 312-981-7200. Yep. Thanks so much.
That's absolutely. Danny Espinosa. He cooks like your grandmother. He's the first one to tell you that.
Grandmother Culinary Institute.
Yeah, so much so. Thanks, Dane. Thanks, Danny. More after the news. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Thank you, Jen. Bill Leff, Wendy Snyder. Pretty excited about what's going on Friday. We get to be the MCs, the master and mistress of ceremonies.
Yeah.
I'll be the master.
All right. That's fine. You got first pick. It's up to you.
All right. And we have a couple of award winners. They will be honored at the Walk of Fame ceremony. There are four inductees this year.
So roughly half of them are in studio with us now, Wendy.
We have a man who hosted a show for 60 years. I mean, that's a goal of mine. Ten Pin Tatler, Sam Weinstein, Andrea Darlis, who I believe was on the Steve Cochran show yesterday. Mm-hmm. And then that leaves us with...
two suspects.
John Williams.
You make it sound like residue.
That's the voice of John Williams. Yes. And Marlene Wells, who has been here over 52 years?
52.
52 years, Wendy.
I can't even believe that. And you're still nice to us.
What was the occasion where you guys interviewed her last year about the people that have come through the studios? Was it when we left the Tribune Tower for some reason?
I think that was the case, yes.
And I thought that was the most interesting interview I
had. Oh, that's so nice of you, John. Thank you.
The stories that Marlene has and how fun it was to hear her tell them was really, really exceptional.
I understand that there was like 35,000 hits.
Really? Yeah?
Yeah.
You went viral, Marlene.
I didn't realize that. Even my niece called and said, I didn't know Aunt Marlene knew all those people.
Viral. One of those interviews you hear and you go, oh, crap, I should have done that one. I was like, how did Bill and Wendy? It was right under our nose. Right. Why didn't I interview Marlene?
And so, viral, of course, meant something much different 52 years ago. Now it's a good thing.
It was an infection back then. Yeah. Marlene, 52 years ago when you first walked through the doors, did you have any inclination at all that it could last more than a half a century? There's no way, right?
No. At first, No, I had no idea.
What was your position that you started at?
My position, I worked for the graphic artist, who happened to be my aunt and uncle's neighbor that I didn't know.
No.
And he, after he found out about it, he walked in and he looked like Mr. Clean because he had a bald head. Mm-hmm. And he stood there like, had I known that you were Rose and Tom's niece, I would never have hired you.
Oh.
You
know,
I hope he was kidding.
He was.
Okay, good.
He was. Because he became my best friend, my like father image. You know, we lost him a couple of years ago in cancer, but he was my first boss, and I loved him, and his name was Frank Bonzinski. And he was always Mr. B, and after I got married, he says, you know, you can call me Frank now. I says, nope, you'll always be my Mr. B. You know, so
I like that you needed to get married for you to be able to call him by a new name. That's funny.
Well, that was him.
That was strange. That was him. John, you've seen a lot of changes here over the years, some good, some not quite as good, right? Is that fair?
Sure, but we don't have to talk about that.
I'll be honest with you. I knew Marlene has been here a long time. I didn't realize how long you've been here, John. What's the running total?
Well, that's a good question because I don't know. 15, 25, maybe 25 years?
Yeah, jeez. Roughly 25 years?
Yeah, I think so.
That's not bad.
Well, when did Andrea Darlis start? Because Andrea and I started the same week.
Oh, I didn't know that.
A couple of Joliet kids finally made it big at WGN.
Yeah, I think she's around 20. It was 21. 22,
yeah, somewhere in there.
Like that, yeah.
Did you guys know each other prior to starting here? You did not?
No, we both started about the same week. You know that you're new when you're working on Thanksgiving.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and she exactly. and I are like, oh, wow, you too, huh? And we were in the Tribune Tower. So one of those first years, it was like this, you know, loser broadcast, and we found out that they had food on the 8th or 9th floor, the Tribune staff that was working. At least they catered food in for them, not us. So we sent, I think, Matt Bubala, our producer, up there to go score us some groceries and come back down. So that's kind of a warm spot between Andrea and I all these years later.
Is there an extra pressure / thrill in working here as opposed to other radio stations?
Oh, sure. Sure.
There
I mean,
is.
Do you guys feel that?
Feel it every day.
I've reached the pinnacle of radio careers at this place.
But you also feel like there's a certain, like, I don't know, responsibility to represent the station and the industry. Of course, that sounds lofty.
No,
right?
It's true,
but
though.
I think if you're working at WGN, then by golly, make an effort, do good radio, be a good listener, whatever the traits are. I really feel like, you should do that here.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Yep. Whenever I would pull into the garage, this is at the old place, but when I would pull into the parking lot, I'd say to myself, this is the way Wally Phillips came in and all the other greats in front of him. So you kind of owe him the effort, you know?
Well, there's a little bit of that. And so, of course, that's just a reflection on what you ultimately feel you owe the listeners. But Marlene can comment on this better than I. But when I did start here, we did our first group picture, like, okay, the new guy's on board. So there I am standing next to Wally and Roy and Kathy and Judy. Wally and Roy were still doing a little bit of radio here, and then Milt Rosenberg, and you know, all of these icons. Bob Collins, for crying out loud. And I thought, oh, one of us does not belong.
And did you tell Bob that?
I should have. But Marlene, I mean, you must have felt that
way,
too.
Yeah, you know that feeling, don't you?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's an all-star lineup. Or it was.
And it's just heartbreaking that I'll never get the chance to meet some of them. You know?
You are that person to somebody out there today, Wendy.
Oh, please, no.
No, actually, I think what you guys do here is so good. And it's
mutually.
It's such a breath of fresh WGN Chicago air. This show, I think, if you said, just pick a show that represents what WGN is about or should be about, it would be you too.
Oh, wow, thank you.
You guys are funny, you're endearing, you will touch on hard subjects, but you don't dwell on them. You can take something that seems to be trivial and make it really fun.
Well, thank you,
this
John.
This is a destination show for a lot of us.
Thank you. Wow.
You're not in the Hall of Fame, but no. I mean, it's a really good show.
But we got a kick-ass compliment. And Duffy, I hope you're using that for a promo.
John, talk about for a while you were doing two different shows in two different cities on the same exact day. I would have no idea how to pull that off.
Yeah, that's why I said we don't have to talk about all of that. And that's why I also don't remember exactly how many years I've been here, because after about 15 years, when the crazy people came here, they said, we're not going to renew your contract. And I said, okay. And they said, but we're going to make you work to the end of the contract.
Yeah.
So I had about 6 months. I found another job in Minnesota. When my contract here was due, they said, you know, we changed our mind. Would you stay? I said, well, no, I bird in the hand, right? I've got a better, safer deal anyway,
yes.
A safer deal in Minnesota. So they said, well, how about you do both? And that began about 4 or 5 years.
Why did you say yes to that? That just shocks me.
Well, I didn't want to leave WGN.
Yeah, I guess that's it.
Even though I was moving. But also I thought, okay, two paychecks is better than one.
Right.
Although it turned out to not be that much better, and it was not good for my mental health. I'll
sure.
I liked hearing you say different call letters here on WGN when I would listen to you.
Thank you for that, Wendy. And I did it up there, too.
Oh, you did?
God, I remember one time I was on WCCO in Minneapolis, and we were breaking at a brand-new showcase studio, and the corporate heads from New York flew in from CBS, and we were all there, and I interviewed Kevin Love, the basketball player who was with the Timberwolves at the time, the NBA All-Star. And so there was a packed room, and I great interview at ISIS. We'll be back after this on WGN.
Oh, no.
And they go to break. And I didn't even know it. And then in my ear, the engineer goes,
you did the wrong call letters. You did the wrong call letters. This is WCCO.
Oh, no.
I hate it when that happens.
Would you find that there were days where, I know there were some topics that you could do both in Minnesota
totally.
In Chicago, but the feeling was different, wasn't it?
Chicagoans are chattier, more opinionated, more forward with it. Minnesotans will just be like, well, we'll just listen right over here.
Yeah.
Yeah. You go ahead and say those things. Mm-hmm. And so the interaction has always been more fun. Here on WG.
Yeah.
The other weird thing is that sometimes people would hear one show in one town. They're in their car driving from one town to another.
Yeah.
So as say the signal fades on WGN after the Dells, they then find another station. But by that time, I'd switch shifts and I'd be on my second show. So they go, wait, I swear to God, I just heard this guy doing the same thing in another town. And it was me, you know, doing the two shifts.
Let's take a little break and then more with Marlene Wells and with John Williams, two of the recipients of the WGN Walk of Fame. That takes place on Friday during our show. Make sure you're listening. Stick around more with us, with all of us here on WGN.
All right. I hope, listeners, you will join us at 10 a.m. on Friday the 13th, as we celebrate the WGN Radio Walk of Fame. And two of the recipients are in the studio with us right now, Marlene Wells and John Williams. I'm looking very forward to Friday. I kind of have to tell you, John, I heard you on with Steve Cochran earlier today. It's different that there aren't going to be listeners that are going to be there. This is kind of in-house.
Right. If you're showing up, don't, because, right, Mar, it's...
Yes.
We're inside. It's a limited space, and we can only fit about 15,000 people there, so we can't. But, you know, I was also thinking, any event that we do over the years,
mm-hmm.
talk about great stories... Marlene has been the coordinating force behind the Kathy and Judy Convention, Pumpkin Fest,
yep.
anything we've ever done over the years.
Yep.
Marlene was the doer of it. Our Thomas Jefferson shows. So I'm wondering if you're going to be working this gig, or are you going to be handing off all
of
that?
I'm doing it.
You're already sending out invitations.
It's going to be torture sitting there for an hour, you know, because usually I'm up and running around.
Slapping right. hands, saying, no, don't do that. Hey, she's the dog that barks to get things done at our events. And her husband, Rick, too, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
Who
so hardworking.
And did you guys meet each other here?
Yep. Met here. He worked here. His mom worked here. So when we said WGN family, it was really meant the WGN family. There was a lot of siblings, husbands, wives, parents, and kids. And in later years, they like frowned on it a little bit. But yeah, Rick and I met here. We got engaged at lunchtime in the picnic area at Bradley Place.
Oh.
Did you get married on the air?
No, we didn't get married
was
on
that
the
a
air.
Remote
but
that you did?
But even even my boss, who was the head of our department, Mr. Sagers, he used to sing at the cathedral in New Orleans, and he sang French and German love songs to start at Mass before.
That's so nice.
And it just bothers me that it was never recorded. So.
Well, what was the weirdest or strangest or biggest event that you coordinated for the station, would you say? Something come to mind?
Oh, let's see.
Biggest pain in the butt.
There was a wedding in the showcase studio. Let's see.
The Pride Parade.
Who got married in the showcase studio?
It was a couple that won a contest.
Who married them?
Rabbi Milt Rosenberg.
No, we had a minister in, and then some of our clients, you know, provided, you know, the evening wear and reception at one of the hotels down the street, and got some wedding gifts and things like that.
Wow, that is a big one.
Yeah, so we did a wedding. We've, like John mentioned, you know, like Pumpkin Fest, auto shows, the Michigan Amateur Lights Fest, Taste of Chicago, Chicago Fest.
Kathy and Judy's convention was really a unique animal.
And you know, all the girlfriends, right?
Sure. Oh, my God. Like 2,000 ladies sell out a hotel.
Yep.
Who could pull that off?
For a whole weekend. Yeah. And Lou Manfredini's Mr. Fix-It events.
Yeah.
The client trips and listener trips, you know, charter airlines, planes, take them out of the hub.
You do everything.
And I converted that into like a first class plane throughout the whole thing.
She goes back in time and gets the orders from dead presidents to find out what they want backstage before our shows.
Not easy.
Well, I guess last year we ran into a little wardrobe problem for
oh God, that's right,
for Teddy Roosevelt.
Did you know what happened? Mm-hmm. So we're doing was it Jefferson and he showed up?
No, he was supposed to be Teddy Roosevelt, and he showed up
with his
Jefferson
outfit.
Oh, that's different.
The same guy that does the one does the other, so he showed up with the wrong outfit. I said, well, you...
right, so that's not
maybe
work.
People won't know, but maybe they will.
So I had to run all over and try to get a costume for him, you know, so that was that last
like that day.
Yeah. I can't believe the stuff you have done for all of us, and we can't thank you enough for all
impossible.
These years.
Yeah,
it's, impossible.
You're here.
It's been fun. It's been challenging. It's
obviously because you're still here.
Or one of the listener trips I had, you know, they took down the timing wrong. We had a late night flight, and we get to the airport, and there was no bus, and it's like, what do you do with 40 people? And I didn't have a company credit card at the time. So it's like, what do we do with 40 people?
What did you do?
I thought, and I called the hotel, and I said, send cabs and put the bill on the master of the hotel.
Yeah.
You know, and that's because they were billing us, and that's how I got the people to the hotel.
Quick thinking, Marlene. Yeah, well played.
She doesn't stop. See, I would just go, oh, well, I'm going to the bar.
That's what I thought the answer was. Well, all airports have a bar.
Yeah.
Problem solved. Not Marlene. No.
I can't wait till Friday. I really can't. This is always a pleasure for us to MC, and we're just really proud of you guys and honored to be working side by side with both of you.
Thanks, and it'll be nice to see some of the previous winners and some of the folks we've worked with over the years. So the family will be there.
That's what I actually look forward to every year.
Yeah, the reunion aspect of it all.
Yeah. To see former people, you know, that comes to see us.
Well, we're proud of you guys, and we can't wait till Friday, and
you both
deserve it tremendously.
Nice of you to say.
Absolutely. All right, we'll take a quick break. We'll get you some news, and then we'll turn things over to Steve.